It's great to see everyone this morning. We had a late night, and it was rappy yesterday, and then we watched some TV, and the TV went late into the night, and I overslept this morning. So I didn't really have time to prepare a message, so I'm just going to tell some stories. Once, there was a guy, he went to the doctor. You think I'm kidding? Once a guy goes to the doctor, and he says, "Doc, I have a problem." He says, "You know, I can't do what I used to do. I don't get around to doing stuff at the house as I used to, and it's affecting my marriage, it's affecting my relationship with my kids, it's affecting my work, it's not well. Please do the most thorough examination that you can." And after a thorough examination, he tells the doctor, "Doc, shoot straight. Call it as it is, plain English, tell me what's wrong." And the man said, "John, I've got bad news for you, it's simple. You're just lazy." They said, "Now, Doc, tell me the medical terms so that I can tell my wife." Today we're speaking about the respectable sin of laziness. Now, I don't think we like to call ourselves lazy. We prefer terms like "I'm ill-disciplined," don't we? But yet, if we look at the scriptures and we look at things like laziness, it doesn't talk about the phrase "ill-disciplined." Does not, you won't find it in the scriptures. So and so was just ill-disciplined. It talks about things like laziness, a word that we don't like, but which so many of us are. It talks about sloth. It talks about being a sluggard or a slug. I mean, these are some nasty words. And this morning I want to ask you, are you lazy? Are you ill-disciplined? Or are you, maybe a better word, are you slothful and a sluggard? See, it's all a matter of perception or perspective, isn't it? A couple of weeks ago at our church office, I asked Jock and Pauline, I said, "Hey, let me ask you guys straight. Are you guys lazy?" And they didn't do anything in particular to deserve that comment. I just asked, "Hey, I'm working on this message, and I just want to know, are you lazy?" And both of them sort of had a blank face. Because certain people, I think, you know by nature, just "I'm lazy," and then you've got to really think about it. Am I lazy? And as I worked on preparing this message and this talk and thinking about my own life, I think some people perceive me as disciplined. And the reason they perceive me as disciplined is that I'm fairly devoted to some basic things. I'm fairly disciplined and devoted to my devotional time with God. I'm disciplined when it comes to family time and to marriage, to spend adequate time with my wife and build our relationship. I spend adequate time with my kids and really invest in them and make sure that I cut off as many distractions as I can, that I set out time for them every day, that I don't take phone calls, I don't have appointments after 5:30 to 7:38. I don't see anyone or speak to anyone other than my children. I'm fairly disciplined when it comes to things like growth. I want to grow spiritually and I want to develop the talents that God has given me, what have you. And if you look at it from that angle, I look pretty disciplined. But then when it comes to things like my tax returns, it's a different story. Now, I hand them in on time, but I usually get notice from Candace, who does my tax returns. She usually notifies me months at end. And I see that email in the inbox, and I put a highlight, that red thing on the side, saying it's important, and then a month later she sends me another one. When it comes to doing handyman work around the house, my wife looks at despair when she asks me, "So can you please, can we maybe do this? Can we get around to drilling that hole?" Or when it comes to matters of administration, and yes, eh? Then it's a different story. And so my question again is, are you lazy? See, I think all of us, in some way or another, we're lazy. And sometimes those of us that seem more disciplined can, and we know it in our own hearts, it can be deceptive because we are disciplined in some outward areas, but inwardly you don't see it all. And you don't see where it's all going. And you don't see the effect necessarily even that it has in our lives. But as I thought about this topic, I thought, but why is it? Why is it that one is, why do you get that? Why do you get someone who, I was just telling, I won't mention his name, I was just speaking to a brother backstage. He's got curly hair. And I said to him, this is what I'm talking on. And he said, yeah, I know sometimes that can be a struggle. And I said, well, the question is, are you lazy or is it a lack of desire? I said, you went to watch a couple of World Cup soccer games. Was that a problem for you? And if any of you watch those games, I don't know if you know how that works, but if you wanted to watch an 8:30 game, I didn't get to go to any of them, but if you wanted to watch an 8:30 game, you had to leave at like 5 to be at the game. There's no way you're going to be late for that thing. Late for church. This morning I... You know, about 50% of us come after 9:30. Actually, more 60 to 70% in all honesty. But it matters of importance. You see, it's not an issue of discipline. It's obviously often just an issue of desire. Why am I disciplined in my devotional life? Because I desire to have a greater relationship with God. Why am I ill-disciplined or lazy or slothful in my taxes? Because I've got no desire to pay it. Now, I pay it, but there's no desire to say, hey, listen, I want to do this well. And often we are ill-disciplined in things because we simply don't like them. I don't like handyman work. I'm not gifted that way. I'm not blessed that way. As another friend of mine said, you throw money at that problem. But yet, it doesn't change who I am in the core of my being. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to take a look at some symptoms of laziness or slothfulness or being a sluggard. See if you can resonate with any of them. Then we're going to take a look at the bulk of the message, and most importantly, is we're going to take a look at the consequences. See, because that's the thing that should turn the corner for you. What are the consequences of this characteristic in my being and in my heart? What effect does it have on me? And then finally, we'll take a look at some cures. How do we, if this is you, which my guess is the bulk of us, how do I deal with it? So let's first talk about some symptoms, and you can see if you can resonate with any of them and if you maybe have some laziness in you. Symptom number one is the couch potato. The remote is your best friend. You literally either do very little or nothing at all. Proverbs talks about someone like that in the book of Proverbs, in Proverbs 19, verse 24. We're going to take a look at some, you'll see in this passage as well, as some very straight shooting passages. Proverbs 19, verse 24 says, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He will not even bring it back to his mouth. Ever seen that kind of person? I mean, it's just, it is disarray. The room is a mess. The kitchen is never clean. The car looks like a war zone inside. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He will not even bring it back to his mouth. That's the couch potato. If that's you, you must probably spend most of your time either in front of the TV, flipping through the channels. Nothing's on, but you keep on flipping. You spend a lot of time sleeping or gaming or just in front of your computer. You usually expect those around you to do things for you. So first of all, you're doing nothing. You're lying on the couch. But then you ask your wife to get you a cup of coffee. Or one of your kids, pull them in. Why did God give them to you? If you're a couch potato, you most probably pay no or very little attention to your spiritual, emotional, physical and mental well-being. You pay no very little attention to your marriage, your kids, and your future. If that's you, you'll most probably tend to be overweight, unfit, and in questionable health. That's the couch potato. Another symptom. You're slow to do things. In Proverbs 26, verse 14, it says, as a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. As a door turns on its hinges, so the sluggard turns on his bed. It is the alarm bell goes off and it snooze. The alarm bell goes off and it snooze. But it's not only the bed. You're slow to get off the couch. Slow to switch off the TV when your kids are trying to interact with you or your spouse or your parents. Slow to put down the newspaper. Slow to switch off the computer. Slow to help around the house. He's slow in getting things done. You are turning on your hinges. The hinges of your bed, the hinges of your couch, the hinges of your computer, the hinges on whatever it is that gives you comfort and ease. You just turn and turn and turn. It says, the door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on its bed. A sluggard, I can maybe just put up a picture for you. I did some research here on a sluggard. On a slug. I always thought that a lazy person, or the word laziness, was named after the slug. And as I did some research a couple of weeks ago, it's actually the other way around. The slug is named after a lazy person. In other words, when people try to figure out, what do we call this thing? Somewhere someone thought of some friends, or a spouse, or a teenager, or what have you, and I thought, my kid is such a sluggard, or my dad, or my spouse, or my husband, or my colleague is such a sluggard. I think this thing should be called sluggard, because you're slow to move, slow to change. Another symptom, maybe you're guilty of this one, maybe you're not, procrastination. Now, Mariska is either laughing at herself or laughing at someone else. Let's hope it's for herself. Who of us sometimes battles with that one? Let me just see in the audience. Okay, wow, okay. So I'm speaking to the right group and seems like we picked the right message. Procrastination, you postpone and delay. You defer. You dawdle. Have you ever dawdled? This is, I was telling Stephanie, she's my assistant, and in the office, and I'm working on a message. I was actually working on this message. And man, I've been at the thing for hours, and now I'm just like, man, I'm honestly not in the mood for this anymore. Now I'm dawdling in the office. Walking through the office, is everything okay here? Anything that needs my attention? You know, and then I dawdle back to the kitchen, and then dawdle back to, and I sit in front of the computer, and I think, man, but there were some calls, and maybe I can make some calls. Maybe I can follow up on some different situations. And let me just quickly give my wife a call. I'm dawdling, postponing, delaying. Students, I don't know if you guys dawdle. As a student, what I would sometimes do, maybe none of you can relate to this, but what I would do is I would say, okay, it's study time, whatever the hour is, from 3 to 7 or 3 to 8 or however long it is. I go and sit in front of my desk, and I say, okay, I cannot work in such an untidy desk. Let me first sort out the desk, and I pull out the drawers, and I fix everything and make everything neat. And because that takes about a half an hour, I'm quite tired. Now I say, okay, let me first go and get something in the kitchen. Then I look in the fridge. There's nothing in the fridge. I dawdle back to my desk, at the desk. Look at, okay, what books do I need to get? And then I think, sure, there must be something in the fridge. And I go back to the fridge. And you look, and with a blink of an eye, 2-3 hours have passed, and then I say, yo, I'm tired of studying. Maybe I should take a break. You leave it for tomorrow. You leave everything for the last minute. You pay your bills at the last minute. First thing you look at when you get that bill is at the bottom where it says, due now, 30 days overdue, 60 days overdue, 90 days overdue, and when it's highlighted, you start thinking with a notice that says, we give you 1 week, we're handing you over to the lawyers. You start thinking, let me pay the bill. And it's not even an issue of money. You have it. Just postpone. Hand in assignments late, or in the last minute. Birthday presents. I've been guilty of that one. I've given birthday presents about a 10 months afterwards. Now, I'm diligent. I write a card and everything. But it's postponing. You're dissatisfied with your spiritual life. You're dissatisfied with your relationship. You don't feel like, hey, I'm doing well with my folks, or I'm doing well with my kids, or I'm doing well with my spouse. But you never get around to doing anything about it. You procrastinate. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Why? Because you are lazy, slothful. Another one, another symptom here is you're constantly waiting for others. Waiting for others. I'll do it when they do it. Waiting for others to volunteer at church. Hey, we need some volunteers in this area. Well, let's wait and see. Let's see if someone else will do it. At home, you're waiting for others to pick up your clothes, others to do the dishes, others to make the meals. Nothing is your responsibility because there is always someone else to do it. Why? You're lazy. Another one, maybe you can resonate to this symptom here. You don't finish. As if you start something, but you don't finish. You go on a diet at least once or twice a year. You have spurts of enthusiasm when it comes to your exercise or health or spiritual matters, but you simply don't finish. You get all the gear. As a matter of fact, at home you've got several supplements that are years old. You've got some of these, I don't even know what you call these things, these very mock stuff, where sort of, you know, they show you some dude that has worked out in the gym for like 10 hours a day his whole life, and they say all that he does is he spends 10 minutes on this little thing that does this. And if you buy this little thing now for $4.99 or $3.99, you can get a chandelier with it or what have you. If you call now. Got lots of stuff, that stuff running around at the house. Here's a more subtle one. Form of laziness. You don't use your gifts or the talents that God has given you to build His kingdom. You're just sitting on them. You're a great singer, but it's going to take too much effort. These guys need to rock up too early in the morning. You've got the gift of leadership, and it's not necessary at a huge level, but you are able to lead one or two other people in Christ, but you know what? It's inconvenient. My life's busy. I've got stuff to do. You're great with children, but you don't want it. It's too long, the kids zone. I mean, it's just too many hours. Or you are in the kids zone, or you are a singer, or you are a leader, but you do nothing to develop it. Nothing. In Matthew 25, Jesus spoke to a man like that, and he said to him, you know what? You're a wicked and a lazy servant. I've given you great gifts, great talents, and you didn't utilize them. You didn't multiply them. It's all forms of laziness. I think if we're honest with ourselves and we listen to these symptoms, my guess is that most probably most, if not all of us, would have said guilty as charged in one or the other of these areas. These are the symptoms. What are the consequences? Have you ever sort of, they often say after an event you need to do a SWOT analysis, and you get all kinds of terms for it, analysis of how did the event go. Now, if you were to do a SWOT analysis on your ill discipline or lack of discipline, what are the consequences? The Bible speaks of several of them. Take a look in Proverbs chapter 10. Consequences of laziness. Because, again, obviously what we're talking about in this series is we're talking about respectable sins, acceptable sins. Confronting the sins we tolerate. As we'll say, I'll never do this. I'll never be adulterous. I'll never steal. I won't get drunk. But lazy? Aren't we all lazy? Ain't that okay? Let's look at some consequences. Proverbs 10 verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands brings wealth. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands brings wealth. The first consequence of lazy hands or laziness is poverty. And I think on several fronts, it might be literally financial poverty and you don't have money or you're in financial dire straits because, let's be honest, because you're lazy. You don't want to work. You're goofing off. It says lazy hands makes a man poor. But isn't it also true spiritually that lazy hands makes a man or a woman spiritually poor? I'm too lazy to pick up my Bible and read and focus on my devotional life. And it leads to spiritual poverty, and I wonder, why am I so spiritually poor? The Bible's very clear. Lazy hands makes a man poor. I don't understand why I'm battling in my marriage like this. And I think several, I've heard word on the street, is that especially a group of the younger married couples, and Lisa and I've worked a bit with you guys, is I said, you feel like, man, this is sort of not what I envisioned. I envisioned it, you know, it's just roses and reading poems to one another. And I realized that we could say, well, it's not what it worked out to be. It's just that this is not fun. Why? Lazy hands makes a man poor. If you want to have a great marriage, you've got to invest in it. Because the opposite side is diligent hands brings wealth. If I'm diligent with work, I'll be able to put food on the table. If I'm diligent with my marriage and diligent with having a marriage night, a date night with my wife every week, and if I'm diligent with my children and making sure that I connect with them and spend time with them, it will bring wealth. Not physical wealth, but it will bring wealth in my marriage. Wealth spiritually. Wealth relationally. So one consequence is poverty. Obviously, diligence on the other side brings wealth. Let's take a look at another one. Proverbs 12. We're going to be bouncing around in the Proverbs. Proverbs 12:24. Diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor. Diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor. Consequence number two, slave labor. Lazy hands makes you a slave to debt, doesn't it? Because you're lazy with your budget, you're always in debt. Always catching up. Laziness can make you a slave to your appetite. A slave to sickness or fatigue because you just refuse to exercise. By nature, we somehow think it's the other way around. We think that diligent hands is slave labor. And laziness rules. So often I've heard people say through the years, but I want to be free. I want to be free. I don't want to experience so much structure in my life. And some of these folk, they're mad men, mad women. They're just too structured. I want freedom, man. I don't want to be so rigid about my budget and just calculate every little cent that I spend. It's too rigid for me. I don't want to be so rigid with my spiritual disciplines. Do I really need to be with God every day? It's so rigid. It is so legalistic. Do I really have to do it? But we don't realize that it's actually discipline that gives freedom. In Proverbs 15:19, it says, the way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. So if you sort of feel, I'm stuck, I'm just not getting where it feels like my path is blocked with thorns, there is a high possibility that you've got laziness. It says, but on the other hand, the path of the upright is a highway, it's a clean road, it's free flowing. Have you ever looked at someone that seems to have it all together and it seems like they're doing spiritually, they're good shape, they're happy with their spouse, their children has turned out well, or the kids have, academically they're doing fine or they're doing great, they look good, they seem healthy, it just seems like such a great package and you think, man, they are so lucky. They're so lucky to have it all together. They're so lucky to be close to God. So lucky to just have life that way. I know many people like that. And when you go up close and you pay attention, you say, you'll see it's got nothing to do but with luck. They are relentlessly disciplined. They're healthy because they're relentlessly disciplined about their eating habits. Relentlessly disciplined making sure that they get exercise. They've got a wonderful marriage because they're relentlessly disciplined about resolving conflict. Relentlessly disciplined about just connecting with one another. They do well academically. Why? Because they are relentlessly disciplined about studying way ahead of time. And they don't look as stressful as you when they walk in that exam room. One of my lecturers used to say that when you walk into the lecture room for the exam, he believes it halfens your IQ. Right there. Stress. Why? You haven't studied. Slave labor. You're always behind when you're ill-disciplined. Look at this one. Ecclesiastes. This is an index book. Meaning you must probably need to find it in the index. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. This one is also, it hits hard and hits straight. Short, but not so sweet. Ecclesiastes 4 verse 5. The fool folds his hands and ruins himself. Third consequence, ruin. The fool folds his hands and ruins himself. In life, you'll often meet people that have just an amazing string of setbacks, disasters, and failures. Everything seems to go wrong for them. It seems like the guys that they just don't pass the test, they just don't get the degree, they just don't get to keep the job, they end up in divorce, and you think, man, how is it possible for someone to have such a huge amount of setbacks back to back? And 90% of the time, when you get close to someone like that, and I'm not saying 100%, but most probably 90% of the time, when you get close to someone like that, and they're honest with themselves, with the appraisal of why did these calamities befall them, they would say things like, well, you know, I just started to let things slide. I put off doing my homework. I neglected to follow up on leads. I didn't keep my eye on the store. I didn't push my chair back from the bar as I should have. I didn't watch the till. I didn't take care of myself. I didn't spend time with my family. I wasn't so focused on my budget as I should have. And the list of reasons go on and on, but stem from simply one thing, a lack of discipline. Discipline, friends, ain't fun. When I tell my kids I'm about to discipline you, do you think they smile? Do they say, Dad, bring it on? Discipline ain't fun. And disciplining ourselves ain't fun either. But when you fold your hands, it leads to ruin. Take a look in Proverbs 21. Verse 25. It doesn't look so pretty, hey, as we look at these things. Verse 25. The sluggard's craving will be the death of him because his hands refuses to work. Consequence number 4, disappointment. The sluggard's cravings will be the death of him. The sluggard craves and craves. Oh, man, if I could just have better physique. Oh, man, if I could just be more fit. Oh, man, if I could just do better spiritually. If I could just have better marks. If I could just have a greater sense of purpose in my life. They crave and they crave. It says it will be the death of them. But they get nothing. because they refuse to work. And Proverbs 20 verse 4, it says, a sluggard does not plow in season. So at harvest time, he looks but finds nothing. It's one of the oddest situations. A sluggard does not plow in season. So at harvest time, he looks but he finds nothing. Think about that. I'm a farmer. I don't sow seed or plant anything. But harvest time, I come out and I say, where's the crop? And then I'm flabbergasted. I find nothing. How did it happen? And I find myself disappointed. And we look at someone like that and it's foolish. And yet we find ourselves doing the own thing, the same thing. We're in our marriage, we're in life, no matter where it is. It's a tough situation. You never prepared for it. You never sowed spiritual disciplines. You never lived in communion with other disciples to build you up. You never really either came to church or paid attention. But when the rubber meets the road, we're flabbergasted. But I'm a Christian. Why am I finding this so hard? Why is there not a harvest? Why is it not working out? And we find ourselves disappointed. Disappointed that I didn't do well in the exam. Surprised. How did it happen? Disappointed that no one seems to like me, but I never work on my quirks. You know, all of us have quirks. We had a workshop with the worship leaders. Well, I was part of a workshop with the worship leaders. And in the opening, what they did, and we must do this once as a church on your small groups, was pretty insightful. Opening, what they did is everyone got a sticker. And then on the sticker, you had to write, I'll use Stephanie as an example. She came up with the idea. Then Stephanie, for instance, had to say, what is it that she feels an area of strength and an area of weakness starting with the first letter of her name. So in other words, she, for instance, said spontaneous, stubborn, Steph. And then you gave someone else an opportunity to do the same thing with you. So in other words, the person that sat to your left would write a positive with the first letter and then an area of weakness also with the first letter. And somehow I got skipped in this exercise, which I'm very thankful for. But it was fascinating. It was fascinating what people said of each other. And here was the most common thing. When people said a particular thing, what the participants felt like was what they said was true, but they didn't think that anyone knew it about them. So in other words, for instance, one situation, someone said the brother is destructive. And he said, I knew I was destructive, but I didn't know that anyone else knew it. We can be very deceived. And laziness does the same thing to us. It does. We end up being disappointed and deceived, where everyone else around you is looking at you and saying, what are you disappointed about? It's obvious, you reap what you sow. Let's look at another one here. Proverbs 10. Fascinating how much the Bible teaches on this, eh? Proverbs 10 verse 5. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son. But he who sleeps during the harvest is a disgraceful son. Consequence number 5, disgrace. Most of the time when we end up in either embarrassment or a disgrace to friends and family and colleagues is when we were lazy. When we slept through the harvest. When we didn't do what we needed to do. Too lazy to go the extra mile at the office, so I lost my job. Too lazy to work on my marriage, so we ended up being separated. Too lazy to work on the sin that's in my heart, and so I just drifted. Too lazy to spend time with my kids and now they want to have nothing to do with me. Too lazy to, you fill in the blank. Leads to disgrace. Next one here. Proverbs. We'll skip one for time's sake. You become destructive, I won't even go there. Proverbs 18 verse 9, let me just mention it, says, one who is slack in his work is brother to one who destroys. One who is slack in his work is brother to one who destroys. We're trying to build a church that would be a light to the world. They'll make a difference in our city and in our neighborhood. And you might think, well, hey, I'm not a full participant. I'm just sitting on the sidelines. It says, when I'm sitting on the sidelines, I'm brother to one who destroys. Well, it's not that I'm doing anything negative in this relationship. If I'm sitting on the sidelines, brother to one who destroys. So laziness leads to destruction, but we can keep that for another time. Last one here. Proverbs 10 verse 26. This one hurts. Proverbs 10 verse 26. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to the one who sends him. As vinegar to the teeth, as smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to the one who sends him. Have you ever stood in front of a fireplace or fire a briar or something and smoke is in your eyes? Oh man, it's just, it stings and it burns. And it says, as vinegar to the teeth, as smoke to the eyes, is the sluggard to the one who sends him. So in other words, when your boss or your wife and you're lazy, if she or he looks at you, they sort of get this kind of picture. Let them show you one there. Is it on? Do they have it? Is that what your kids see when they look at you? That's a sloth. That's laziness. A sloth is... As vinegar to the teeth, as smoke to the eyes, is saying, oh my goodness, if I have to ask Joey to do this, oh man, my eyes are stinging. Oh no, I've got to ask my husband this, oh man, no. And you see that picture. The final consequence is you're a nuisance. I thought if I could say that from the pulpit, and I thought, well, yes. Because that's what we are when we're lazy. There's been times where I've been a nuisance to my wife. There's been times where I've been a nuisance to God. Because God is saying, Van, I want to send you on a mission. I want you to be able to reach your neighbors. I want you to influence people's lives. I want you to be a light to the world. And then he looks at me again. He sees that picture. He says, oh no. I forgot. He's lazy. He's a nuisance. Now, you maybe came to be encouraged this morning, which the encouragement comes from repentance. So these are the consequences. It's ruin, it's disgrace, it's disappointment, it's nuisance, it's destruction. Here's the million-dollar question. How do I fix it? What is the cure? What do I need to do? Because each of us have a little bit of laziness inside of us. What do I need to do to turn a corner? Now, this plan is very simple, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. You're going to hear me say these very next words several times over the next 6 months. Number one, you have to admit you have a problem. Stop calling yourself ill-disciplined, and start calling yourself slothful or a sluggard. Take that picture and stick it on your wall or something, and with the words on top, this is me. When it comes to this area. So number one, you got to be honest. Admit, I have a problem. Number two, study the subject matter. Go to the Bible. Study what the Bible teaches on laziness. Memorize scriptures like, listen here, lazy hands makes a man poor, but diligent hands brings wealth. And when you're too tired to budget or you're too tired to invest in your kids or in your marriage, remember that passage. Lazy hands make a man poor. Diligent hands brings wealth. But study every scripture in the Bible and every story that you can find on it. And make it your own. Number three, get yourself a mentor. Get yourself someone that can show you the way that you can say, listen, let's be honest. My budget is in disarray. I don't know how to handle my finances. I've been telling myself for 10 years that I know how to handle it. And the facts speak differently. Can you help me? Mentor me. Show me. How do you do your budget? What do you do even for the teens here? I see you've got a great relationship with mom and dad. How do you do it? I'm not good at it. Show me the way. Mentor me. Teach me how to have a marriage like yours. Teach me how to raise your kids. Teach me to be as disciplined as you are disciplined, because I have no idea how to do it. Mentor me. Show me the way. Number four. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Number four. This is big. Get yourself an accountability partner. And this could be someone in honesty that most probably needs to do a little bit better than you in this area, but that is willing to keep you accountable. Do it with someone. If you want to work in your marriage with someone. In other words, where two guys get together or two sisters get together and say, we both got to work on this, right? Let's keep each other accountable. Let's study the subject matter. Let's get a mentor. Let's get a plan. But then let's keep each other accountable. Let us ask one another. If it is diet, man, it helps when you're on diet with someone else. I have had to pay attention to my eating habits lately. And it's not been an easy journey. It's been about 6 weeks now. I've lost a couple of kilograms. Basically, the diet is I can practically eat nothing. It is, in short, it's chicken and vegetables. I've had chicken and vegetables now for 4 weeks, every night. Chicken and vegetables. Chicken and vegetables come out of my ears. But you know what's hard? When you arrive somewhere and there's cheesecake and there's everything that my heart desires, and everyone is eating it but me. What helps is if you have a buddy that sits with you eating the carrot. It just helps. A couple of weeks ago, I realized that I'm physically out of shape about 6 weeks ago, so I've got to pay attention now and take action. And usually when I get to something like that, I pull others in. So I told Jock, Jock is as thin as her, but I said, he needs to go to gym. I think he needs it. And we're sitting in my house, and it's one of those days where it's the end, it's late afternoon, I'm tired, I just can't see you doing this. And we plan to go to gym, and suddenly a headache developed. And I just think, I'm going to bail, man, I'm going to bail. And he just looked at me at some point, he said, I hope you're not planning on bailing here, hey? We're going to go, aren't we? I said, okay, let's do it. Accountability. Get an accountability partner. Accountability. How's your budget doing? Ask me about how my budget is doing. How are you doing in this particular area of your life or this particular sin? How are you doing? Let's keep each other accountable. And then the last one, which we are sometimes cool doing the first ones, the last one is just do it. Take action. Get time in the arena. Do what it is that you need to do. Keep record of your expenditures. Budget. Fix your eyes on what is ahead and not on impurities all around you. Get yourself in the gym. Change your habits. Work out that diet. Spend the time with the kids required. Cut down from work. Spend more time with the family. Just do it. Don't philosophize and talk and strategize. And sometimes, man, we've got a war plan on the wall. It's all laid out, but we never do war. Final thing is get in the arena. And then the opposites of all those consequences become true in your life. Then poverty leads to wealth. Disappointment leads to joy. Nuisance leads to, man, I cannot wait to send him because I know that they are someone that gets the job done. But I do want to say to us, church, let's not tolerate this sin. It will destroy us. Let's close out with a word of prayer.